Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to Bio 231. Last time we had a lecture test, and they're graded there in Blackboard. But of course, I want you to look over all your tests, so see me during office hours. But we do have some time during lab this week to look at some tests. But you also need to look over your practicums, too. So that doesn't give us a lot of time to look at exams and lab. So see me during office hours tomorrow. Between 9 and 11:20, sometimes I'm in my office, sometimes I'm in the anatomy study room. I'll try to remember to bring all the exams with me and you can check them out. But you should check your Scantrons and reread some of those questions just to see how I like to write questions and what I think the right answers are, okay? Okay, so let's see, what is today? It's the 14th. Sign-in sheet is going around, all right? So please sign in. We're going to talk about some muscles today, some more muscles. And then next time on Monday, we're going to talk about the endocrine system. So if you want to look over endocrine system before lecture on Monday, that's a good idea. And then on Wednesday, we're going to talk about nervous system. But look at next week. We just have lectures, no practicums and no lecture exams. So that's nice. You get a little breather, but you do get an opportunity to get some more course points because there are some lab quizzes, and don't forget about the online quiz due next week, too. All right, so our next big exam is going to be the week after next, and that's going to be the third practicum on muscles. So after this week, we get one more lab on muscles, look at some muscles of the lower appendage, and then the third practicum. And then we get spring break for teachers, and then the week after spring break is the third lecture exam. And we're going to switch from a Monday test to a Wednesday test. So just kind of be a little bit careful with that one. And the next lecture exam is going to be 10, 11, 17, and 12. All right, which is okay. That gives you a lot of time to study. And don't forget, we're putting this exam off because of these practicums, because I don't want to have a lecture exam and a practicum on the same day. That would be a little brutal. And the other thing is, too, we're switching from a Monday to a Wednesday. So that postpones it a little bit later in the week. All right, so even though that's after spring break, the week right after spring break, you still got a lot of time to study for it. Any questions on the schedule whatsoever? No? You're good with that? Okay. All right, so let's continue on with muscles. And what is muscle specialized to do once again? Oh, I didn't say what the date is today. I better say what the date is today. March 14th. Okay, for lecture purposes, so I can get it online properly. All right, what can muscle do? What's muscle specialized to do? Contract, right? And usually we think of a muscle as having two ends to it. What are the two ends of a muscle? Origin and insertion. Usually muscle attaches to bones, hence we call voluntary muscle. What kind of muscle? Because it's attached to bones or it's attached to your skeleton, we call it skeletal muscle. So in most circumstances, okay, I'm just going to show one monitor today, I think. Since skeletal muscle is attached to two different bones, when that muscle contracts, what happens to those two different bones? They get pulled closer together through some kind of joint or articulation. So most muscle is important for movement, all right, or for maintenance of posture or stabilizing joints. There's only a very few muscles in your body that are not attached to bones, and those are mostly attached to skin in your face. All right, so when a muscle contracts, the bone doesn't contract, but skin is going to move around your face, and so that's really important for facial expression. But usually skeletal muscle is attached to bones, which stabilize joints or moves different bones in your body by bringing those two attachment points closer together. So that's how I want you to think about muscles, bringing bones closer together via those attachment points. Okay, and we talked about how we name different muscles sometimes by the shape. What's your favorite muscle by shape? Deltoid, that's a pretty easy one, okay, because it looks like a triangle. Orbicularis is a circular muscle. Rectus is just a straight muscle. You might be thinking of rhomboid, because a rhomboid is a square muscle that's angulated a little bit, which a geometric shape would be a rhomboid. So there's quite a few muscles that are named by their shape. But what is by far your favorite way of naming a muscle? If you were going to name all the muscles in your body, what would you pick? I know what I would pick to make it easy. okay, would be by the origin and insertion, okay? Because then you wouldn't have to memorize origin and insertion. The answer would be automatically given to you. So if a muscle is named by origin and insertion, what comes first in the name of the muscle, the origin or the insertion? Always start with the origin, and the last part of the word is the insertion of that muscle. All right, but then you have to know some physiology, too, of muscles, and that is when you have a muscle with an origin and insertion, which is the least movable end? It is the origin, and the most movable end then is the insertion. Right, and last time we talked about the rectus abdominis muscle, where the origin is the pubic bone and the insertion is the xiphoid process. All right, so when the rectus abdominis contracts, what bone moves more? The pubic bone or the xiphoid process? Xiphoid process, because indeed that is the insertion. Okay, and the pubic bone is the origin. All right, well, there's a lot of excellent interactive exercises on the internet for you to use. Most of them I have links for in Blackboard. So let's look at some weekly assignments and go to the muscle week. Okay, muscle week, muscle tissue. So muscles of the body, that was due on the 13th, which was last night. Is that good? Everybody say yes, got that done. All right, wonderful. All right, but still the module is active until when you take the test, which is, when is the test? Oh, not till the week after spring break, so that's quite a ways. Hopefully I programmed Blackboard properly. If I didn't, let me know and I'll make sure to open these back up because there are a number of exam figures that you have drag and drop exercises for. I don't really want to look at these, I think, right now. These you can work at home with. All right, but some other really good websites. For instance, I want to go to Get Body Smart. All right, so here are some links for Get Body Smart. You can right-click and open it in a new window. That's probably the best way of accessing that site. So let's go and look at some muscles. All right, and I want to look at muscles, for instance, in particular. So I'm going to right-click. I want to open it in a, let's open it in a new window. All right, so here's the pretty familiar Get Body Smart site, and let's see, if I go Control Plus, look at that. You can make it bigger to get rid of the advertisements. So guess what? Nothing is free, but it's mostly free. This is really a super site. Okay, so muscles that work on the anterior arm. Let's take a look at that deltoid, since that was a pretty favorite muscle of a lot of people. And so this is a really handy website. Let me just maybe scroll down a little bit just so we can see more of the muscles. This is really good because the illustrations are really nice and clear, and you can disappear the labels. For instance, if we click on deltoid right here, it's a virtual dissection program, so we can dissect away various layers of muscles to look at just an isolated muscle to know what its origin and insertion is. Or we can look at this complicated mass of muscles, right? So I see a number of lead lines, and the lead lines disappear. You can practice labeling these different muscles, and then to check yourself, turn the labels back on. So I don't know, let's just do that a little bit. So here we see the deltoid, and then anteriorly, here's a nice anterior view. Here's the pectoralis major, and then what do we got? The biceps brachii, we got two heads of the biceps, the long head and the short head of the biceps. And then over here, a little bit of a coracobrachialis. That's really nice because that tells you what the origin and insertion is of this muscle. I just see a little snippet of it on this particular illustration. Those of you that have had lab already, maybe can picture this muscle in your mind, the whole extent of it. Those that didn't have lab yet, but we'll have lab this afternoon. We'll go over this muscle and you'll see where it goes. But if you know how to interpret the name coracobrachialis, what's the origin of the coracobrachialis? Coracoid process of the scapula, which is way up over here, and the insertion is the humerus. That's what brachium means the humerus, right? So it's mid-diaphysis and medial aspect of the humerus, and that's where that muscle is, right? So biceps, and then underneath the biceps, we're going to take a look at this one. This is the brachialis muscle. All right, but we were wanting to look at the deltoid. What happened to the microphone? Is it still there? Oh, it is still there. Okay. Okay, so deltoid, let's look in particular at the deltoid, and it has a triangular shape, or it looks like a delta. And let's get rid of the pectoralis major just disappeared. Okay, what was that that just disappeared? Oh, the brachialis just disappeared. I put it back, and then I removed it, and then the biceps brachii disappeared. Okay, and then that coracobrachialis is disappearing. I took that away. Some muscles in the back, for instance, latissimus dorsi, and then this, oh, that looks like a teres minor muscle is moving out of the way. Subscapularis is moving out of the way, and we're left with a deltoid right here. All right, and we can see the origin being right on the lateral edge of the clavicle, and there's also another origin on the spine of the scapula. Okay, and a acromion process, and the insertion, all these fascicles converge to the deltoid tuberosity on the humerus. I can't remember if that was an exam, a practicum question or not, deltoid tuberosity. Maybe it was on the lecture exam, but that's a pretty standard thing that you should know, right, deltoid tuberosity. And if you want to see them individually, you can click on origin, right, and you can see the origin in red, and you can see the insertion in blue, just as it's labeled on the skeleton that we have in lab. All these muscles have been painted on the skeleton in blue and red so that you can actually see where the origin and insertion is. All right, and if you know origin and insertion, that should pretty much tell you what the action of that particular muscle is. Because what does a muscle do? Can it push? You can push, but it's only because some muscle is contracting someplace in your body. All right, so remember, the deltoid can only contract, and when it contracts, what's going to happen with this blue dot compared to the red dot? They're going to try to move closer together, right? It's going to shorten that distance between these two points because that's what a muscle does. And the motion that I want you to know is that the deltoid, when the whole deltoid contracts, it's going to pull the humerus away from midline. When it's pulled away from midline, what do we call that motion? Abduction, and indeed, come on, cursor, where did you go? Ah, here he goes. Abduction, click on abduction, and you get a nice little animation that describes what that motion is. And maybe practice that motion, because I know quite a few of us are what we call kinesthetic learners. That means that we learn best by actually producing some kind of motion, right? That's why some of us are fantastic football players and baseball players, and some of us are not, unfortunately. I would probably give anything to be a professional baseball player, but oh well. Okay? So go through the motion, right? Abduction, and you can work the motion with this little slider as well. All right, if the anterior part of the deltoid contracts, but not the posterior part, that's going to move the humerus anteriorly, and this is probably one of the most difficult motions to appreciate. All right, when the humerus moves anteriorly, what do we call that? Okay, I don't see an angle decreasing in my body, which is typically how we understand flexion, but think of motion at the shoulder as being analogous to the motion at the hip. So let's look at motion at the hip. What motion is this? Flexion and extension. So here we have flexion of the shoulder, extension of the shoulder, and even hyperextension at the shoulder is okay because it's a nice ball and socket joint. All right, so can we show that on this diagram or on this animation? Sure, we can flex. Ah, indeed, we got our motions correctly memorized in our mind for flexion. All right, so that is primarily the deltoid is the prime mover for abduction. And sometimes, maybe on a practicum, we'll put a label on a muscle. Like, for instance, we'll put a label on the deltoid right here. And we know since it's in the lateral body compartment, it's going to pull the arm laterally like this, so it's going to abduct. The question might be, even though the arrow's on the deltoid, not name the muscle or name the action, the question might say, what is antagonistic to this muscle? All right, so how would you approach trying to figure out what's antagonistic to the deltoid? Easiest way is by opposite body compartment, right? So if the deltoid is on the inserting into the lateral side of the humerus, you want to think of a muscle that inserts into the medial side of the humerus, opposite body compartment. And we just kind of talked in passing about that particular muscle. Let's see if it pops up when we go through here. It might. It just did right there. Right here. Right, so here's the muscle on the medial part of the brachium, and this is that coracobrachialis. Alright, so the coracobrachialis is going to be an adductor. Let's go find coracobrachialis in this list right here. Do we have it? Has it been programmed in? It has. Alright, so this is a really nice muscle, easily named, easily understood, because the origin and insertion is a part of the name of this muscle. So here's the coracoid process on the scapula, right? It just inserts medially, mid-diaphysis on the humerus. Muscles can only get shorter, they can only contract, so it's going to try to shorten this distance. So it's going to, if the arm is abducted, it's going to pull the humerus back down to the side, which is what we call adduction, just like that, okay? But since the coracoid process, or the humerus, and the relationship of the coracoid process and the humerus, it also weakly flexes the arm as well. And on a practicum, you just have to give me one correct motion, right? Not the whole list of possible motions. So this is, for me, it's really easy to see that the coracobrachialis is an adductor as a result. All right, so Get Body Smart is really good for looking at the relationships in terms of functions of muscles, why certain muscles are synergists and why certain muscles are antagonists. So we just demonstrated which principle, synergism or antagonism? Antagonism, because the muscles were on opposite sides of the humerus. All right, let's talk about, maybe let's switch the topic, let's talk about synergism, for instance. When two muscles, what are synergist muscles? Muscles that produce the same motion, as opposed to muscles that produce opposite motion. Okay, and let's pick the biceps brachii. All right, so let's look again at the muscles on the arm. Do we see biceps brachii? No, because it's, you see it, you see it, you see it? Biceps brachii, really good. Okay, I don't see the other muscle I'm looking for, so I'm going to go back up over here. Muscles that work on, pretty good. Okay, we're going to look and see why it was in that other list in just a little bit. All right, biceps brachii. So we're still in the anterior body compartment. All right, so here's the deltoid pectoralis major. Again, you can use Get Body Smart just to help label some of these muscles. And all these muscles are on your lab list for sure. Here's the biceps brachii, and in that name it tells you that the biceps has two major heads, right, and one insertion. And the long head is the supraglenoid tubercle. We talked about that before. So let's get rid of some of these other muscles. Ooh, what just disappeared? I'll put it back. Deltoid. Okay, and then what's disappearing? Pectoralis major. Okay, and then what's going to disappear? Oh, what was that? We didn't talk about that one yet. That's a brachialis, latissimus dorsi is disappearing. We're going to talk about those in just a little bit. Subscapularis is gone, and that leaves us with the biceps brachii, and we can see it in isolation, which is really nice. Here's the origin of the biceps brachii, and then down here is the insertion. Most of the action that's produced by the biceps brachii is across the elbow, which causes flexion at the elbow, or you could say flexion of the forearm, one or the other, right? The origin also goes across the joint. It goes across the shoulder joint, and it's anterior to the shoulder joint, so the biceps brachii can also weakly flex at the shoulder, right? But that's not its prime reason for existence. The prime reason is for flexion at the elbow. So let's look at these two heads that attach to the scapula. The long head of the biceps brachii goes between the greater tubercle and lesser tubercle of the humerus. And remember, there's a depression there. What's that depression called? The intertubercular sulcus or intertubercular groove could be called either one. Oh, look, it's turning into a link right there. I don't know what that link is. We'll click it soon and see what happens. I don't want to click it right now, but we'll find out what's going to happen. Okay, and so the long head, this tendon goes through the intertubercular groove through the shoulder joint and inserts into the scapula. And if you can remember, on the top of the glenoid cavity, there's a tubercle, a little rough raised area, and that is the insertion for the long head, the supraglenoid tubercle. The other insertion is the coracoid process on the scapula for what we call the short head, because this part of the muscle is longer, right? The long head just has a longer tendon, hence its name. We can look in isolation of the insertion, okay, by clicking origin right here. So you can see the origin of the long head, origin of the short head, and then here is the insertion, the radial tuberosity, and then some fascia that is around the ulna. So when this muscle shortens, it causes flexion of the forearm. Okay, so let's click on flexion. Indeed, that's flexion. I agree with that. All right, so remember, for lab, only one motion is necessary to be shown. All right, so why did this turn into a link right here? Should we click it or just pretend it doesn't belong? Let's click it, see what happens. Click. It turned into a link. Oh, maybe because we're already showing origins and insertions. If we do this, what happens? Nothing. Somebody has something planned. Okay. It's nothing. Never mind. Question. Was there a question?
I have a question.
Yeah. Fusiform. Okay, fusiform has to do with the overall shape of the muscle. Fusiform means that on the ends, the muscle is very narrow, but in the middle of the muscle, it's very broad. Okay, so it has a pointy end at the insertion, has a pointy end at the origin, and because of that shape, it's called fusiform. So if I think of a fusiform shape, I think of maybe like a porpoise that has a really narrow nose, and the tail is kind of narrow compared to the major body of a dolphin or a porpoise. Okay, that's fusiform. Is that on this list someplace, or? It's just because we talked about the biceps as being an example. We just remember fusiform? Okay. Otherwise, I'd relate it to this figure. But it has a really narrow end. The ends are very narrow. Okay. All right, so you see the biceps brachii, the origin and insertion. And the biceps brachii has an important synergist, and it has an important antagonist as well. Let's look at the synergist. And the synergist muscle is going to be deep to the biceps brachii, and it's not recognized very much just in common everyday inspection, right? And it's called the brachialis. But you guys got to know it's there because it's the prime mover for forearm flexion. All right, so the brachialis is deep to the biceps. So here's the biceps, and I can just barely see the brachialis underneath it. Let's get rid of some of these muscles right here. All right, and here is the brachialis muscle, deep to the biceps. The origin is the anterior distal shaft of the humerus or diaphysis of the humerus, and the insertion is the coronoid process on the ulna, so it works across the elbow. And notice it does not work across the shoulder, so it's not a flexor of the shoulder, it's just purely a flexor of the elbow. Right, a flexor of the shoulder was the biceps brachii as well. So let's look at the motion, and it's flexion of the forearm. So that's the prime mover for forearm flexion. And since it's in the same body compartment, what can you tell me? Same body compartment as the biceps brachii, it is a synergist, right? They're both anterior to the humerus. And as a matter of fact, we could get rid of the brachialis altogether, right? And we can see where it is positioned, what the origin and insertion is, and indeed it is anterior to the humerus. All right, so if I have this labeled on a practicum, this muscle labeled right here, okay, indeed you're going to want to say brachialis if I ask for the name. If I ask for a synergist, what would you say? What would be your thinking process? Same body compartment, name the muscle that's in the same body compartment, and that would be the biceps brachii, okay. There's another muscle called the biceps femoris. Would you want to say that as a synergist for the brachialis? The biceps femoris. No, because that's in the femoral region in your body. Where's your femoral region? That is your thigh, right? So totally different region. Does not relate. Does not even, there's no comparing apples and oranges right there. All right, but if I have an arrow on the brachialis and ask for an antagonist, what would be your thinking process? opposite body compartment. So you're going to be looking in the posterior arm. So let's see what we have in the posterior arm. And that would be the triceps brachii. All right, so triceps brachii would be a really good example. We're getting rid of a number of muscles right here. So here's the triceps brachii. And how many heads does the triceps have? Okay, triceps means three, okay? And so what we see on this diagram here is the lateral head and the long head. The long head has an origin all the way up at the infraglenoid tubercle. And can you see some symmetry, some anti-symmetry over here? Not only is the triceps on the opposite body compartment, but the origin is exactly opposite compared to where the biceps brachii is. The biceps brachii is the supraglenoid tubercle. The triceps is the infraglenoid tubercle. Okay, and the insertion of all three heads of the triceps has a common insertion into the olecranon process of the ulna right here. So it works across the elbow, which causes extension. Okay, and this long head can also produce a little bit of extension at the shoulder as well as adduction. But that's not so important for you to know. So all heads of the triceps are going to cause extension of the forearm or extension of the elbow. And so right now we can see the elbow. What is the elbow in this diagram right here before we put it in motion? How would you describe the position of the forearm or the position of this elbow right here? It's in flexed, right? So when we contract the triceps, then it's going to extend, just like so. All right, so let's stop it. That's extension. All right, now for muscles, for most muscles, well, at least in the muscle chapter, we don't have to know any nerves that innervate a particular muscle. But when we get to the nervous system, there's going to be a few because there's some muscles that we can't live without. We can't even live for 4 or 5 minutes without that muscle contracting. So we do want to know the names of some nerves, because if some of those nerves get damaged, then that's really important because somebody only has a few minutes to act to save somebody's life. So we're going to talk about that in a little bit, okay, in a couple of weeks coming up when we get to nervous system. All right, so we looked at synergist muscles and antagonistic muscles that work at the elbow. We talked about synergist and antagonistic muscles that work at the neck. Can anybody tell me two muscles that are synergists of the cervical spine? Just name a muscle. Name a muscle in the cervical spine or your neck. Okay, platysma is right there. That's for depressing the mandible. Okay, and yeah, you're really good. Well, let's work on that platysma just a little bit. I'm not going to pull up any pictures of it, but the platysma depresses the mandible. What would be antagonistic to the platysma? And the platysma is inferior to the mandible, so think of a muscle that is what? Superior to the mandible, and that is a couple I could think of, masseter and temporalis, will elevate the mandible, right? And I suppose you could even say the pterygoid muscles. All right, so those are really facial muscles, but the platysma is in the neck. But what's another neck muscle? Somebody mentioned, and I forgot what you said, sternocleidomastoid. Ah, yeah, it's like one of my favorite muscles. Sounds really intimidating, but it's not, because origin and insertion is in the name itself. That's the anterior muscle for what? Flexion of the cervical spine. So what about an antagonistic muscle to the sternocleidomastoid? It's going to be the muscles in the posterior neck, and those are the splenius muscles. Splenius, yeah. That's what we have in your list in your book. It has a number of splenius muscles. Has splenius capitis, splenius cervicis, but you just have to know splenius, right, for extending the neck. Let's look at the shoulder right here in terms of flexion. Okay, and a muscle for flexion at the shoulder, muscles that work on the forearm. We might get to the shoulder, act on the shoulder. Let's look at this muscle right here, pectoralis major. Where is it? I'm looking right at it, but I don't see it. Ah, right here. Thank you. Pectoralis major. Okay, what's the action of the pectoralis major? All right, first let's try to understand that by looking at the origin and insertion. Here's the origin. on the sternum and the medial parts of the clavicle, and then all of these fascicles, which is very broad origin, converge onto just below the greater tubercle and part of the greater tubercle of the humerus, and this is on the anterior part of the humerus, but it's a lateral, anterolateral part of the humerus. And remember, a muscle only can contract, it can't push. So when this muscle contracts, it's going to pull the arm toward midline. We call that adduction. But it's also going to pull the humerus anteriorly when that happens. So what do we call that motion when the humerus moves anteriorly like that? Think of what? The hip. That is flexion, right? So the pectoralis is the prime mover for flexion. So we can click on that, and indeed we see flexion taking place. All right, and if you want to say on a practicum adduction, that's pretty easy for me to understand. All right, and you can see it on this diagram as well. All right, so that's the pectoralis major for flexion of the arm. Where would you want to find and consider a muscle for the opposite motion? What's the opposite motion? Extension, like if you're going to do a pull-up, you grab a bar that's above your head and you pull your humerus back down like that. That is extension of your arm. What muscle is responsible for extending the arm? Okay, and where is it going to be? It's going to be posterior, so let's look in the posterior compartment. It might pop up if I put some muscles back, and it just popped up. I see it right here. Here is the latissimus dorsi, looking from the anterior side of somebody's body, so we're looking through somebody's body. Okay, that's the latissimus dorsi, but we can probably do a little bit better job. And let's look from the posterior side, so here, shown from the back, latissimus dorsi. Okay, so here is latissimus dorsi, and let's get rid of some of the superficial muscles like that trapezius, get it out of the way. So the origin are the spines of a number of vertebrae in the thoracic region, okay, and a couple lumbar divisions, and then this is a convergent fascicle arrangement. It goes, inserts just below where the insertion for the pectoralis muscle is. So the latissimus dorsi, right, we'll pull the arm toward midline, just like the pectoralis does. So in one sense, the pectoralis and latissimus dorsi are synergists in terms of adduction. Both are adductors. Okay, but now here's where they can be considered antagonists to each other. Because when this muscle contracts, it's going to pull the arm posteriorly. Right, and what did we call that? That is extension. So latissimus dorsi extends the arm, the pectoralis flexes the arm. So opposite body compartments in terms of anterior and posterior, it has opposite motions, extension and flexion. But because they're both medial to the humerus, they both will produce adduction. So it depends on the orientation that you want to think about. All right, so that's the easiest way to understand muscles, is by the functional relationship of them between antagonism and synergism. And Get Body Smart is a really good site for observing that. Okay, what about some other muscles that you should be aware of? I'm not going to show you any pictures of these, but we talked about it a little bit. We talked about the rectus abdominis. Or maybe I talked about it in lab and not lecture. So here's rectus abdominis. Can anybody remember from last time what the origin and insertion of the rectus abdominis is? They're in your lecture notes. The origin is the pubic bone. The insertion is the xiphoid process. And when that muscle contracts, it's going to pull the xiphoid process to the pubic bone like that. That's called flexion of the spine or vertebral column. All right, so for flexion of the vertebral column is the rectus abdominis. What's antagonistic to the rectus abdominis? How would you start thinking about that? Opposite body compartment. What's the opposite body compartment compared to the anterior trunk? Posterior trunk. And what muscles do you have to know in the posterior trunk? There's a whole bunch, hundreds of muscles, but there's one name that I want you to know, and that is what? The erector spinae. So erector spinae and rectus abdominis are antagonistic to each other because they're opposite body compartments. Okay, let's see what we can find in terms of working across the knee. Muscle system. And we haven't talked about this in lab yet, but we will. Posterior thigh. Okay. I don't see the thigh very well in this diagram. I just see a little bit of it right here. Let's see what happens when we click rectus femoris. We get a much better diagram. Oh, but before I do that, there's actually another muscle group that I like even more. Okay. All right, so we're looking at the hip right here. And let's just look at one motion, this motion right here. What's that? That's flexion, and then we got extension. Let's look at the prime mover for flexion at the hip. Okay, and it's going to be the psoas muscles. All right, so these are muscles that are inside the pelvic cavity, okay, but they're anterior to the hip, so when they contract, they're going to pull the femur up toward the abdominal cavity. And there's two muscles there called the psoas major and the iliacus. The iliacus has its name because the origin is the iliac crest, right? So here's the ilium, and then down here is the ischium, and then here is the pubis in the front. So here's the iliacus. Here's the psoas. So let's look at the psoas major muscle. So it's going to get rid of a bunch of these muscles right here. Right, so we're going to get anterior thigh, a bunch of these muscles, adductor muscles, and we're left with the psoas. And we can see the origin on the transverse processes in some vertebral bodies of lumbar vertebrae. And the insertion is way back in the posterior part of the femur on the lesser trochanter. Here's the greater trochanter. So when this muscle contracts, it's going to pull this lesser trochanter up toward the vertebral column. And when that happens, we call that flexion at the hip. Okay? So when people are doing sit-ups sometimes, not only do they lift their back up off the ground, they actually sit up and maybe put their knee or their knees on their chins or move their chin all the way up through their knees over here. So this is the muscle that they're exercising when they do that, and not necessarily the abdominal muscles because they're really flexing at the hip. So psoas major is one of the muscles for flexion. The other important muscle for flexion at the hip is the iliacus. Let's take a look at the iliacus. Here's the iliacus. So it's the iliac fossa and iliac crest of the adducte, and it inserts into the same place that the psoas major does, which is anterior to the hip. So it's also the prime mover for flexion at the hip. So every time, like, you're walking up steps, when you lift your foot up off the ground, when you flex your hip, the iliopsoas muscle is doing most of the work. Okay, but to walk up steps, what else do you need to do besides flex? You also need to put your foot back down, right? And that's called extension. So where would you look to find some muscles for extension? So instead of the anterior hip, you're going to be looking at the posterior hip. All right, and so let's find a muscle that's in the posterior hip. And do I see it? Do I see it right here? No, because we're anterior thigh. Let's see if we see posterior thigh. Okay. And the prime mover for extension is the gluteus maximus. All right, so here's posterior thigh, and the gluteus maximus is right here. Okay, so it goes from the ilium, and it inserts into what we call the gluteal line, which is just is an extension of the linea aspera that I think maybe was on your practicum, which is on the posterior part of the femur. All right, so when this muscle contracts, it's going to, especially if the hip is in a flexed form, it's going to cause extension across the hip. All right, so I could possibly put, for instance, an arrow on the practicum on the gluteus maximus, which is easy to see. Your first inclination would be to say, oh, well, that causes extension at the hip. And the name of that muscle is gluteus maximus. But if the question is, what's an antagonist to the gluteus maximus, what would you say? Go from the posterior hip to the anterior hip, and the muscle in the anterior hip that goes across the hip anteriorly is the iliopsoas muscle. And you can say psoas major if you want, or iliacus, that's okay. But I think in your lab book, we just combine it as one muscle, iliopsoas muscle. Okay, so let's just go over these muscles real quick. What muscle, what's the prime mover for this motion? What is this motion? Flexion at the shoulder. Prime mover is the pectoralis. Okay, and then what's this motion here? Extension. What's the prime mover for extension? Latissimus dorsi, opposite body compartment. All right, at the hip, what's this motion? Flexion. What's the prime mover for hip flexion? Iliopsoas, and then extension. Opposite body compartment would be gluteus maximus, right? Okay. All right, so you don't have to know all of these particular actions right here, right? Just a major action, like the gluteus maximus is for extension. All right, let's look at muscles that work across the knee. And let's start with rectus femoris. It's getting rid of a lot of different muscles. I don't want to necessarily do that. Okay, here's the rectus femoris. Rectus just means very straight. And the rectus femoris participates with three other muscles that are in your anterior thigh. All right, which makes four different muscles. So sometimes we call this the quadriceps. Now, would we want to call this the quadriceps brachii? No, because it's not in the arm. Right, where is it? It's in the thigh. So this would be the quadriceps femoris. That was, and we talked about this muscle because you had to know a lot about the diagram of the knee for both the lecture test and on the quiz for this week. All right, so here's the quadriceps. One muscle of the quadriceps is the rectus femoris, which is right here. And we can see the origin on the adcoxae, as a matter of fact, on the ilium. Here's the anterior superior iliac crest. Here is the anterior inferior iliac spine. Did I say crest? Ooh, I maybe said crest. That's not crest. That's a spine. Okay. And then the insertion is via the tendon of the quadriceps into the patella, and then the patella inserts into the tibial tuberosity, right? So the true insertion is the tibial tuberosity. What does it say here? Oh, it says patella. Oh, tibial tuberosity. That's good. All right, so when this muscle contracts, it's going to cause extension of the leg, just like that. Okay, but because it also works across the hip, it is also a weak flexor of the hip, just like the iliopsoas. So the iliopsoas is a lot stronger. But if you want to just remember, extends the leg, that would be really, really good. All right, but what are some other muscles that are synergists to the rectus femoris? Any in that body compartment, which would be all the other companions of the quadriceps. So let's look back at the quadriceps. What do we have for the quadriceps? We've got the vastus lateralis, vastus medialis, and vastus intermedius are the other three muscles that make up the quadriceps with the rectus femoris. So let's look at maybe the vastus lateralis to see that. Okay, so put some of these other muscles back. Actually, I'm going to get rid of them. So here's the vastus lateralis, right, which does not work across the hip. It just goes from a line between the trochanters into the tendon of the quadriceps, which then inserts into the tibial tuberosity. So vastus lateralis, because it's the lateral muscle of that group. The vastus medialis will be in this location over here. Let's see if we can get it to pop back up. Okay, here is the vastus medialis, and the vastus intermedius is going to be deep. It's going to be between the lateralis and medialis right here, but nonetheless, it has a common insertion into the tibial tuberosity. So these are going to be important, what? Extensors of the leg. All right, but that's not the only motion at the knee, okay? Extension is very important for like kicking and walking, but what's another important motion at the knee? Okay, so the quadriceps are important for extension. Other muscles for flexion at the knee are going to be located where? Quadriceps are anterior. The flexors of the knee are going to be posterior thigh. So let's look at some muscles for the posterior thigh. Muscles that work on the leg, posterior. Okay, there are three important ones. All of these right here sometimes are referred to as the hamstring muscles. In this location right here. All right, and I clicked on semimembranosus. So let's get rid of some of these other muscles. Semimembranosus go from the ischial tuberosity, okay, across the knee, okay, to the medial epicondyle on the tibia. But this muscle here mostly works across the hip. So when it contracts, it pulls, okay, your heel posteriorly like that. So that's flexion at the knee. That's one of the hamstrings. Let's see if we can get another hamstring muscle. Here is the biceps femoris. And the biceps has two insertions, which I'm not going to really show you, but I see both of them right here. Here's the biceps femoris. And this is neither antagonistic nor synergistic to the biceps brachii or the triceps brachii because it's a totally different body region. All right, but it is antagonistic to a muscle. What muscle is the biceps femoris antagonistic to? The quadriceps femoris, right, anterior thigh, and the biceps femoris is synergistic to a muscle. Which muscle is it synergistic to? The semimembranosus, okay, because they're in the same body compartment. The last muscle that's part of the hamstrings, didn't want that one. Okay, is this one right here. It's called the semitendinosus, which is superficial to the semimembranosus. It lies on top of the semimembranosus. All right, so let's look at these three muscles. All of these are synergist to each other, which means they're antagonistic to the quadriceps femoris. Let me get rid of some of these muscles. So how are you going to remember their names? Semimembranosus is the most medial muscle of the hamstrings. Right, which stands out, and look at all these M's in semimembranosus, and there's a nice big M standing out in medial. All right, so if I haven't given a lecture or looked at muscles in the thigh for a couple decades, I can kind of figure it out. Semimembranosus is the medial one. Semitendinosus is going to be right on top of it, and then the biceps femoris is going to be the lateral muscle. So start with the semimembranosus, which is medial, the biceps, which is lateral, and then the semitendinosus, which just popped up right here, is the superficial muscle. And it's called semitendinosus because it has this big, really long, huge tendon right here. Okay? But all of these are synergistic in that they flex the thigh. Okay? And antagonistic to the quadriceps. Okay, let's look at some muscles in the leg. Okay, so we looked at the muscles that work across the knee, and the muscles in the leg down over here will work across the ankle. Let's look at some of those. And in particular, what do we have? That's okay, but I want to go to another one. Back, neck. Foot. Okay, gastrocnemius. All right, so here's a nice illustration of gastrocnemius. Really nice illustration of all the muscles. Some of these you don't have to know. What don't you have to know in here? I saw some soft popliteal, but it disappeared. Okay, here's the gastrocnemius. And this is in the posterior leg. Where's that leg located again? So when I use that term leg, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's between your knee and your ankle, right? So it's not your thigh. So posterior, maybe if you've seen joggers on the side of the road, and you want to not run them over, you got to pay attention that you don't run them over. But you might have noticed that these muscles are big and huge and strong on them, along with some other hazards to navigation on the road. Some other exercisers that are on the road, sharing the road with you, would be the bicyclists, right? The bicycle riders, okay? This muscle is huge and hypertrophied, okay? Gastrocnemius, let's look at the origin and insertion. All right, so the origin is in the femur, these epicondyles on the femur, and the insertion for both the medial and lateral head of the gastrocnemius. They could probably have called this the biceps, but they didn't, right? It's just called the gastrocnemius, even though it has a medial and lateral head. Inserts way down across the ankle into a foot bone, which is the calcaneus, right? And sometimes this tendon we call the calcaneal tendon, but it goes by another name. Sometimes it's called the Achilles tendon from Greek mythology, because what happened? Because there was a person by the name of Achilles, and there was some god, and I can't remember, the god wanted to protect this person, picked him up by the heel and dipped in him some magic potion, right? And that magic potion covered most of his body, that protected him from injury, except for what? The very tip of his heel. And unfortunately, somebody shot him with an arrow that landed right in the tip of his heel, and probably that killed him. Okay, so that's a little example of the Achilles tendon right here. It's a common tendon that inserts into the calcaneus, and it comes from the gastrocnemius, as well as one other muscle that we're going to look at in just a second. Okay, so remember, muscles can only shorten, and when this muscle shortens, it elevates this posterior part of the calcaneus, causing your toes to get pushed into the ground. So anytime you push your toes into the ground, we call that plantar flexion. So when you push on a bicycle pedal, or when you're running, pushing into the ground to propel yourself, right, the gastrocnemius gets that exercise and gets hypertrophied. All right, a synergist muscle. Where would we look for a synergist muscle? To the gastrocnemius. And what kind of motion is produced by a synergist muscle? Same motion, which is plantar flexion. Where would we look for another muscle that plantar flexes? Same body compartment. Okay, and so here we are, posterior compartment leg muscles. That's going to be the soleus, right? And here is the soleus. And typically we don't see the soleus because it is deep to the gastrocnemius. And the soleus is a big, powerful muscle just right underneath the gastrocnemius. And it kind of reminds me of two muscles that we looked in a different body region. That were in two muscles that were in the same region, produced the same motion. One was superficial, one was deep. And it's very easy to see the superficial one, but it's pretty easy to miss the deep muscle. And that was the biceps brachii and the brachialis, which is deep to the biceps brachii. So relate that to the gastrocnemius and soleus. Soleus is the deep muscle. All right, the insertion is the Achilles tendon into the calcaneus, which then produces plantar flexion. All right, so plantar flexion is produced by what muscle groups in what region? What region is this right here? This is? Is it thigh? Is it leg? Indeed, it is a leg. And what part of the leg? Anterior, posterior, medial or lateral? Posterior leg, right? So all posterior leg muscles are going to cause plantar flexion. Where would you look to find muscles that cause the opposite motion? What the heck is the opposite motion? Dorsiflexion. Yeah. So where are we going to look to find muscles that dorsiflect? Anterior compartment leg muscles, right? And in particular, tibialis anterior. That protects your shin a little bit, but it's not super massive. Doesn't protect your shin when you bang your anterior part of your leg. Okay, so here is the anterior tibialis, and we can see it going across the ankle joint, and when it contracts, it's going to elevate, right, these plantar surfaces of the foot, right? It's going to lift your foot up off the ground, your toes up off the ground, and that's what we call dorsiflexion. Okay, it has some other actions, but I just want you to know dorsiflexion, especially because it's what? in the opposite body compartment to the soleus and gastrocnemius, and it just produces the antagonistic motion. Okay. All right, so I think that's all I really wanted to show you today is how to appreciate these different muscles by body compartment, producing either synergist motions or antagonist motions. Okay, sign-in sheet is going around. So make sure you sign the sign-in sheet. Next week, no practicums, no lecture exams, only the lab quiz. And then the week after, there is a practicum, and then the week after that is the next lecture exam. Okay, any questions before you all take off? Sign-in sheet is coming down somewhere. Yeah? Splenius muscle is in the posterior neck. I have to Google splenius. It probably has a meaning. Probably the root is from Latin, and I don't know what splen. I'll Google it. It probably has a connotation.
Quick question. I was still working on the lecture.
Yeah.
And I noticed